I'm Jay Barrett, and this is the Kenai Conversation. This morning, we're talking about boating safety, boating inspections, marine radios, all manner of things that the United States Coast Guard Auxiliary, locally, is involved in. With me is Marion Parrish, and you are the flotilla commander, I assume?
Yes.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. Any trouble finding the place?
A little bit, not much.
I imagined you were off in the river, rescuing kittens that fell in or something.
Well, it would be nice, but it would just miscalculation on how long it would take me to get here. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Of all the things that can go wrong in radio, that's a pretty minor one. So, well, tell me, what is the actual name of the auxiliary here? You have a flotilla number, is that correct? What's your... Tell me a little bit about the whole organization.
Well, the whole organization, I'll start with the national level. The Coast Guard Auxiliary is a force multiplier for the U.S. Coast Guard. We are the volunteer arm made up of a group of dedicated men and women who enjoy and thrive on helping people. And so in Alaska here, we are the 17th district. It's the 17th Coast Guard District. As an example, Hawaii's 14, we're 17, East Coast is 1 and 2, et cetera, like that. The district is made up, we have about 296 auxiliarists in the district, and that's cut into two divisions. First division is Juneau, Petersburg, that area, Sitka. And we're the second division, which is the rest of the state, basically. Kenai, which is us here. On the peninsula, we have Kenai Flotilla, Homer Flotilla, Seward Flotilla. And then if you want to throw in Whittier's actually Anchorage, but I suppose they're close to the peninsula anyway. Mm-hmm. So we are the Kenai Flotilla. We are 170-02-02. So the 170 is 17. 02 is the second division. The second 02 is we were the second flotilla in this division.
All right.
So that's the number.
Yeah, 296 members. That's huge, actually.
Members in the state, but if you consider the square miles of our state, that's pretty few and far between.
Oh, yeah. Even less if you count the miles of coastline.
Right. Yeah. And the miles of coastline, we are, I forget the numbers, like 10 times bigger than any other state as far as coastline. Maybe it's even more than that. Somebody will smack me for having the wrong number. But, yes. And the auxiliary here, well, everywhere, really, there's four cornerstones of the auxiliary. They are member services. We take care of our own. We teach our own. Fellowship. We enjoy each other's company most of the time, like the rest of the human race.
Right.
And operations and marine safety. Marine safety consists of marine safety and environmental pollution, and then public boating safety or boating safety. And a lot of our classes that we advertise or that we do with KDLL is part of that boating safety.
Oh, sure.
And all of these classes, there's a fee attached, but most of that fee covers books, textbooks, things of that nature, and then there's a little bit of that fee that goes to the flotilla, and that's how we operate.
Oh, okay.
And it's strictly a volunteer organization. There's no pay. Matter of fact, we all spend lots of money.
Oh, boy. What kind of person is attracted to the flotilla, former Coast Guardsmen or fishermen or just people who want to be involved somehow? Or?
Yes, I believe that's the case. It's quite an eclectic group. We have prior military. We have people with no military experience. We have people with they could care less about military experience, but they want to help people. And I think that's the biggest thing. there, I'm sure somewhere along the line, there's people that join just to be part of a group. That's part of human nature. But most of us, I know myself, I want to help people. I want to help. I want to do it in the background. I don't want to stand in the forefront and scream how great we're doing. But I want to help people. And with the auxiliary, there's many, many ways we can do that.
Oh, wow. What? Well, let me give the phone number out first here, 283-8414. If you'd like to talk with Marion Parrish about the Coast Guard Auxiliary, which we are learning about here today on the Kenai Conversation. You know, one thing I noticed about the boating safety courses that you guys do is that lately I've noticed that a lot of them are have been oriented towards not the master of the boat. You know, like people who need to drive the boat or navigate it if something happens to the skipper, or radio work. I think there was a workshop last night on radios, how to use a marine radio. And is that a new focus or an expanded focus, or just one of the things you do?
Well, we get together as a group and we decide, well, we brainstorm ideas of a way to help people. And one of the things that's been noticed nationally and in an emergency, many people don't know how to operate the radio. And if there's an emergency on a boat, the skipper, whether it's me with one passenger or whether it's a vessel with many passengers, that skipper's pretty busy. One of their jobs is to radio for help, but what if the skipper's injured? And simple things on the radio classes, you have to press the mic to talk, and you have to let go of the mic, the button, in order to hear.
Right.
And in an emergency, people, the adrenaline starts pumping, and they forget to let go. So we practice those things. We practice what you need to put out. A lot of times with radio operation or emergency situations, you may only get a short time to broadcast. So what do you need to tell people? You need to tell people where you are. You need to tell people what the boat looks like. You need to tell in general how many people are there, how many life jackets. What do we look for when we come to find you if the boat's not there?
Oh, right.
Those kinds of things need to be put out, and we practice those in those radio classes. And there's new radios out now that'll do that for you. If you spend the bucks, you can get what and register it through the MMSI system and digital selective calling, where you just push a button and that radio starts sending it. Not only does it send it, it doesn't tell how many people are on board, but it tells where you are.
Oh, right.
With GPS.
Oh, okay. So the signal's got GPS embedded.
Right. And in our GPS classes, we teach people some of those kinds of things too. How to use the GPS. Some people think the GPS will tell you where you're going and all that sort of stuff. Well, the chart plotter will, but the GPS tells you one thing. It tells you where you are. And so you have to figure out other parts of it with chart plotters.
Wow. Who comes to your classes? Do you get a lot of husbands and wives who aren't?
Husbands, wives, sometimes children, adult children, and sometimes younger children. Particularly in our Suddenly in Command class, that's the one that's really set up for the non-skipper. What happens? What do you do if something happens to the skipper?
Right, that's the first one I noticed like that.
Yeah. And so how many people that go out on a boat can operate that boat or can yell for help or know how to yell for help? And those are the things that we do there with those classes. Again, it's education and it's preventative. That's our main mission with the auxiliary, is the preventative arm of the Coast Guard.
Oh, okay. You know, when I was a young man living in Seattle, I lived on a boat in Fremont for a while, for about a year and a half. It was awesome. It was a 1936 Boeing, made by Boeing. Anyway, every once in a while, the guy who owned it, who lived over in Bellevue, he'd come over to Fremont and, you know, we'd take it out and with friends and such. But one day he said, you know, I should teach you how to drive this boat in case something ever happens to me. And it took me all afternoon to get from being underway to getting the boat stopped in the water and calling somebody. It took all afternoon to get that coordination right. It's not a little thing.
It's not a little thing, and people don't realize boats don't have brakes. So you have to figure out what's going on there. And one of the things in our classes that people are so concerned about, or some people, is I don't know how to dock this thing. I don't know how to get this thing in. But if there's an emergency, just get close. Somebody will help you.
Uh-huh.
So you bump the dock a little hard, you know. If there's an emergency, for instance, a medical emergency, and that's some of the things we stress. A lot of us boaters that have the time and the finances to create this thing that you, this hole in the ocean you throw money into, are not so young. And those medical emergencies can certainly happen, and they do.
Oh, sure, sure. Do you guys talk in your classes at all about how to work with a rescue swimmer if there's one lowered, from a helicopter in case of that kind of emergency?
We don't spend time on that directly, because part of the reason is if there's a rescue swimmer there, the active duty Coast Guard are going to be in contact with the boater, if they can be in contact with the boater. Or the rescue swimmer is going to get on board, and then he's going to instruct people what they need to do. I would love to work with those guys, and in some areas they do. They practice with the active duty Coast Guard, and we are doing some of that locally with Seward, with Coast Guard personnel in Seward, not the rescue swimmer type things, but coordination with the Coast Guard. And our operations arm communicates directly with Sector Anchorage, with the U.S. Coast Guard there, and their personnel. They would instruct us in search patterns and those kinds of things, basically so that they know what's going on, so they can coordinate air and other things that might be involved.
Oh, sure, sure. Prior to working here this time, I worked in Kodiak for 12 years. And, of course, there's a big Coast Guard base there, largest in the nation, actually. And, so I've watched and listened to a lot of they always shoot film from the helicopters of rescues. And, I could imagine being one of the rescuees, being it's got to be an incredibly scary time, but the rescue swimmers always seem to get them in there in one piece and calm. And by the time they're, I swear to God, by the time they're up into the door, half of them are smiling. I don't know if they're just happy to be off a sinking boat or something, but, they just got lifted 150 feet in the air.
Well, I've been hoisted one time in practice back when I was active duty a couple of hundred years ago. And it's an experience. Because that Stokes litter, we call them Stokes litters at the time, it's something similar today. That litter that mm-hmm. you're in, it's spinning and it's moving and you're going up and the helicopter's shaking and you look down. And, I wasn't injured. It was just a familiarization type thing. If you're injured, I suspect it's different.
Yeah.
You're just very thankful that you're out of the water. And once you get up there, they pull you in. And it's a very, very stable platform, the helicopter is.
Yeah, it's big inside there, too. A lot of people don't realize that. A lot of room. And they have electric blankets. I'm fortunate I've never needed one, but I've talked to people who were happy that they had them. The class last night was on using radios. Is that something that is – I know you mentioned the automatic radios, but is that the only technical thing you guys teach about boats, how to operate the radio, or like starting and stopping the engine, putting it in reverse?
Our boating safety classes, we go over the various types of engines. We go over the various types of controls. We encourage people to learn how to operate the boat that they're on, because everybody has a different boat. If I were to instruct you on strictly stern drives, then that doesn't help with outboards or inboards or various and other configurations. But we encourage them. We show, and we can give demonstrations on what you do. What do you do with a single engine? How do you control docking, maneuvering in general? How do you spin them? You know, those kinds of things. Radios is one of those things that we can control, not control, that we can teach directly. GPS is another one that's sort of generic from one unit to another. But even those have different parameters by different manufacturers.
Oh, right.
So we speak in generalities. Now, if someone brings in a piece of equipment, we will instruct them on it, precisely what that will do. And if we don't know, we find out.
Do you does the auxiliary, does the flotilla have its own vessel of any kind?
Okay, the vessels, that's kind of an interesting thing. I stated earlier that we're all volunteers. So we volunteer our vessels to become what we call facilities. Those facilities have certain parameters. They have to have certain equipment, all mandated by the Coast Guard themselves, about what we need on board. And we offer those vessels as facilities. We offer them for use. Then, if we get underway under orders, under Coast Guard orders, that facility is covered by the Coast Guard.
Okay.
There are some places that they purchase specifically vessels for this type thing. And maybe a city purchases it. Whittier, for one, has just purchased a previous Coast Guard vessel that the auxiliary there, that the Whittier Flotilla, may use as a facility. So those are some of the parameters. Homer has a facility that the auxiliary uses that is actually, I hope I get this right, that they have there's a corporation or a corporate entity that owns it called Rescue 21. But that's what it's set up for, is for actual rescues and patrols and that sort of thing in Homer. I have a vessel here in the Kenai area. I actually live in Kasilof. That's a facility. And we also have another member in our flotilla here that has a facility. He lives out in Nikiski. They're both trailerable boats, but we can use those for whatever. And because they're trailerable, we can get them underway in a site, say if we had a rescue out in the inlet, that we could get them underway fairly quickly.
Sure, even at low tide.
Right.
Yeah. Is there much... I know they talk about Cook Inlet being, you know, a dangerous body of water, and you know, with the high tides and all, and the currents and such. But is there very much rescue needing out there, or how are our mariners here?
Well, our mariners are very good, and we haven't been called out in many years here. Homer has had some. Homer can get kind of treacherous if you round the corner down there. And then Ketchumak has a lot of boating. Our boaters here, we kind of take care of ourselves, the fishermen here and everybody, and Good Samaritans. If we don't have a facility in an area, and this is the vastness of Alaska, the Coast Guard would broadcast out potential rescues, and Good Samaritans will take care of it. And they do, and they have, and they continue to do so.
Oh, yeah. Boy, I don't know how many, I want to say pretty much every Coast Guard rescue story I've ever written, somewhere in there was a Good Samaritan vessel. And it's amazing, you know, I mean, they're your fellow fishermen, you know, they're out there to make money too, but they're stopping to help their buddy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
It is 10:30. Let's take a quick break here and see if we can rustle up some coffee and make our way back. Let me press a few buttons here we'll be back in just a minute or two. Our phone number, if you'd like to give us a call with some questions, 283-8414. We'll be back in about 5 minutes. ¶¶ You're listening to KDLL's Kenai Conversation. This morning we're talking about the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary and its Commander Marion Parrish. How are you doing this morning?
Doing just fine.
You wanted me to ask you about recruiting. Is that recruiting for the Auxiliary? Is that what you're talking about, or for the Coast Guard in general?
Well, recruiting for the Auxiliary. The Coast Guard has their own methods of recruiting, and they're doing quite well. The Auxiliary, as we age out a little bit, we aren't getting too many younger people into the influx. Of course, in society today, young people have a lot of things to do. I don't know how you make a living today to live with today's prices. But we are always looking for dedicated people that want to help other people, because that's what we're doing. And we don't want to grow exponentially or anything like that, but as we turn over statewide, we are in a negative, not big numbers, but we're in a negative decline. And the Auxiliary nationally is 5,000 members less than it was several years ago.
Oh, wow.
Nationally. So there's a lot of things tugging at the individual who wants to volunteer, and we're just one of those. But I would put out that if anyone is interested, feel free to contact me, and at some point I'll give you a number. With everything, understanding, it's a lot of fun, but there's a lot of training to get to these levels and to do these sorts of things. But it's fun. We have a meeting tonight we have a little potluck at 6, and then our regular flotilla meeting, be the last one until August, is at 6:30 at the Cook Inlet Aquaculture Center. That's where we hold our meetings. So if anyone out there in Radio Land is interested, stop by and see what it's all about.
Oh.
And, yeah, there's no fees. Some people misconstrue that we are an enforcement branch or something for the Coast Guard. We are not. We have no enforcement. We don't want any. We think of ourselves as the good guys. We're out there to help people. And
you guys do the, the preseason fishing boat inspections, or is that active duty?
Well, the auxiliary does it. We don't have any. Well, we do the personal fisheries, but the commercial boats and the six-pack boats are a little bit different inspection process, and we don't have any here. Seward is the closest. There's several of us, myself included, that are trying to get the training because there's a need for it. Right now, it's only active duty that can inspect the commercial boats, which puts quite a strain on the fishermen to try to get the Coast Guard personnel where they need to be, right. And it's a strain on the Coast Guard personnel to be where they need to be.
I know some of the busiest Coast Guardsmen that I've ever interviewed were people with the inspection unit.
Yep.
They are just busy all the time. Of course, that was in Kodiak, too, where all the boats are.
Well, it's Kodiak, but it's the same thing here, too.
Sure.
Homer has a small detachment. We used to have a detachment here, pre-Marion, but they moved to Homer. The active duty side, there is one commercial inspector on the peninsula, and he's in Seward, and there's quite a process for us to get that designation to where we can do that. And most of it involves being trained by active duty personnel. Well, the right personnel have to be in the right place, and we have to be in the right place for that to happen.
Oh, sure.
But we're trying to make it happen.
Yeah. You were active duty Coast Guard, you told me.
I was.
Yeah. Clearly, you had a good experience with them.
I had a very interesting experience, and I tell people my story. In 4 years, I packed a whole bunch of things in there. I joined the Coast Guard actually to stay out of Vietnam, then ended up volunteering to go. So the first 2 years I was in Hawaii, I was in the Philippines, I was in Vietnam, I was back in the Philippines off and on, and then I was transferred to New Orleans. It's called Captain of the Port New Orleans was the assignment, and I was a 40-foot utility patrol boat operator there for the rest of my 4-year tour.
Oh, wow.
In the Coast Guard. So
a lot of people don't understand that the Coast Guardsmen go to war zones.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What kind of? Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was on what they call temporary duty. I was on 82 footers, which patrolled the mouth of the rivers in Vietnam. But we have patrol boat operators in the Middle East also. Now, I don't want to talk to the Coast Guard side. It's changed from when I was in to what it is now. Not that the focus has changed. They still do search and rescue. They still do law enforcement. They still do everything that they do. When I joined, it was under the Treasury Department. And then it changed to the Department of Transportation while I was in. And then after 9/11, it came under Homeland Security.
Right.
So.
What's a typical call out for a member of the detachment here? What kind of things could they be doing? Not everybody's driving a boat. Not everybody is. What kind of things do you do in the auxiliary? The people that you teach, not you yourself. What can they expect to do if they join and participate?
We have a large membership that enjoy dealing with children. For instance, personal flotation devices, what you do, how to encourage them, marine safety, environmental, cleaning up the beaches, those kinds of things. So that would be one group, if one wished. We have other groups that enjoy teaching classes. And there's some certification that you get in order to teach. None of this is difficult, but you got to go through a little bit of a process. To teach these boating safety classes, we have another thing that we call program visitors. All this literature that you see in some of the establishments, boating establishments, post office, those kinds of things, we have people that enjoy doing that. They go and they visit, they meet the owners or of the establishment or whatever, and set up that literature. Then we have scheduled vessel inspections, which are free, which is not an enforcement thing. I want to get that out there. We're not going to, you know, if you don't have everything you need, we're not going to immediately dial the Coast Guard and tell them to, you know, watch this guy. That doesn't happen. We simply go through very quickly, visit a little bit with you, and just make sure you have what you are required to have and what one would need to have. Little things like charts and stuff like that. One of the biggest things we have in a call out is in a rescue type situation, a lot of people don't know where they are, or they don't know how to tell you where they are.
Oh, wow.
Well, I can see so-and-so over there. I know how to get to so-and-so. Well, where are you? Well, you know,
right.
So, and then we have to figure it out. So little things like that. If you have a chart, say your chart plotter or your GPS quits working, it is electronics. And it is in a marine environment.
Yeah.
What do you need? Having a small set of charts there. Having the rules of the road. Those kinds of things on board. Having the proper number of life jackets or personal flotation devices. Having flares or some alternative. All of those are required.
Mm-hmm.
So those people are trained, and they have the literature to do those free inspections.
Oh, wow. Are those offered on a schedule or by appointment? Or?
Either or. One of the things is we want to get those inspections. We want people to know, at least know what they're supposed to have. So we will set up sites. There's going to be a site at Fred Meyer in Soldotna. There's going to be a site at River and Sea. We're looking for a place over here in Kenai to do something. Where we just set up for a day or half a day or something with signs, and people just pull their boats in there and we inspect them. People can call us and say, I would like to get my boat inspection, and we will come to you.
Ah, okay.
Which is nice, especially if you have a large boat that you don't want to tow up and down the road very much. So we do the same kind of things there.
Wow. How many folks are in the flotilla here in Kenai? You mentioned the statewide number, and then that the other half are split between here and Homer?
And Seward. Oh, we have 22 members, of which 20 are very, very active. So,
Is that up or down or sideways from before?
We have three new members, so that's all good. And a lot of our membership comes from our classes because we're out in front and they see that we don't bite and, you know, everything's okay.
Mm-hmm. Where are you recruiting at? I know you guys are really good with your press releases, but, you know, besides science, how are you, are you making speeches to, you know, sewing circles and knitting bees and, you know, stuff, trying to talk to all these folks who may be passengers on boats?
No, we aren't. We aren't actively recruiting in that respect, but we always ask people if they're interested, kind of word of mouth. And like we have a lot of classes. So, and our previous membership came from those classes. They decided they liked what they saw, what we did. We talked about various things, so they joined. It's a fairly painless joining process, but there is a process. You know, you have to fill out paperwork. You have to get blessed by the Coast Guard, and you have to pass a background check type thing. Monetarily, it's $50 a year or something like that. It's not a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the meetings. Normally, we have a meeting once a month. We take the summer off, so we're not having any meetings in June and July. I tell people from the Lower 48 ask me all the time, do you have four seasons in Alaska? And I said, yes, we have four seasons. We have winter in June, July, and August. So we take off because we're also boaters, because we have a lot to do during the summer, a lot of us fish, a lot of us personal use fish, and we're busy teaching classes and doing vessel inspections and those type things. So we really don't have a need to have a meeting as far as planning, because we planned out the summer in advance. So,
sure. Everybody likes the summer off, especially here, in the Central Peninsula. How many members can you handle? And if you have 20 now, what's the most you've ever had?
You know, I don't know. I don't know what the numbers are, but we probably average around 20. How many could we handle? We could handle whatever. I mean, the job is huge that we try to do. When I say job, you know, nobody's punching a time clock or anything, but it's a responsibility, at least in my eyes it is, on a personal basis, responsibility to get this out. There's no magic number. Kodiak has 90-something members. Whittier has 80-something members. There is a minimum that I think of active members that there is a number. I don't want to express that number because it's a minimum, and I don't want to get there.
Yeah, right. What kind of experiences have you had, maybe adventurous ones, with the auxiliary? Any at all? You get called out on a search and rescue or...?
I personally have not. I've only been in the auxiliary for a short period of time. The auxiliary, I had some really exciting times active duty, but we've performed rescues. We've had rescues out of Homer. We have rescues out of Whittier, because it's Anchorage, because there's a large number of people there, and because it's a fjord. It's a narrow area coming into, and people are fishing and people are netting, and there's been some serious things there, and the panhandle gets quite a bit. I believe if we had more facilities on patrol here, we would have more opportunities for rescues. A lot of the stuff that happens in our immediate area here, you really never hear about.
Yeah.
The boat gets in trouble. Good Samaritan comes along, takes care of it, tows them in. Everything's cool. Not a problem. Mm-hmm. So if we had patrols out there, I think there might be a difference.
Oh, okay. Is that something that auxiliaries do elsewhere in the nation then? They have facility patrols?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
And part of our dilemma here, in order to run a facility, you have to have a crew. And that crew consists of the boat driver that we call the coxswain, who is mandated for the responsibility of everything, of the members of the boat, of everything. To be that person, there's quite a bit extensive training, and you have to pass certain tests, and you have to pass certain tests in front of certain people. So making that happen here is difficult. For us right here, we have 3 crewmen, 0 coxswains.
Oh.
2 of us are working to be coxswain, myself and one other. Previous experience is great, but it doesn't count. You still have to jump through the hoops necessary to become a coxswain.
Really?
Another example, Homer has 2 coxswains and no crew. So we work together there, and that's just what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We go down and crew for them, and they coxswain for us too sometimes.
Sure. And what are those patrols like?
We go out on patrol. We go out on orders from Sector Anchorage. They are our order issuing authority, the OIA. I love acronyms, don't
oh,
you?
Yeah.
What that entitles is the facility is protected. The personnel are protected medically, insurance-wise. And the Coast Guard will buy the fuel, oil, those things necessary for the patrol. Nothing else. I mean, we don't get a paycheck or anything like that.
Right, right. Wow, you just said something about the boats. Yeah, slipped my mind. I'm getting that age. Things are slipping my mind here. Swapping the patrols. I mean, do they?
Right.
What are those? I mean, have you been on those?
Yes, I have. And we go to. We haven't pulled any patrols here. As a flotilla commander, I'm trying to make that happen.
Yeah.
Very, very much so. I have some coxswains from Whittier that are willing to come over and be coxswains on our facilities. the two that we have here, until myself and one other that are pursuing this can get those coxswain qualifications. We go as crew down to Homer. They have a nice facility, and they have two coxswains there, and one coxswain can act as crew if he wants to. But, and then we go out on those patrols. We go out, we show the colors, we practice things that we need to practice, maneuvering, man overboard drills, things like that, so that we know how to do it on various facilities. And we're there in case something happens. We're underway. We're right there. If somebody calls in, the Coast Guard would call us, and then we would deal with that. The most recent one out of Whittier, they actually had a call of, and they had to bring people in, get the facility up to speed, and get underway. And they were able to do that within 3 hours. That sounds like a lot, but they had to drive in from Anchorage and go through the tunnel and get the right number of crew and coxswains and everything and actually get underway. I think that's pretty fast.
I think so, too. I mean, just getting to the tunnel in 3 hours some days. you guys work with AMSI much, the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association?
We coordinate with them, and we coordinate with other state and federal agencies, fishing game, et cetera, to educate. And like, as an example, the Kenai dip netting fishery, we know can be a bit of a challenge. And there's some coordination going on between the Coast Guard, us, Fish and Game, Fish and Wildlife, to not necessarily regulate it, but just have a presence, just be there in case something happens.
I've seen some close calls, you know.
I've
some
seen
boats,
some very close calls.
Yeah, boats going back upriver, you know, and somebody's tiptoeing a little too far out into the channel with his dip net. And I think it was, I don't know how long ago, 10 years ago, fella floated out and drowned, I think. Yeah.
And if we have facilities on site, then we can do something about, because we're looking, we're not fishing. You know, and that's one of the things. If an accident occurs and everybody's fishing, you're focused on the you may not even know this person's in danger.
Yeah.
And
so what else needs to happen to get a facility up and going here? More.
We need coxswains.
Coxswains, okay.
We're working
on that. There's two of them.
There's two of us working on it. Both of us have aspirations of finishing it this summer. I'll give you myself. I can't speak for Johnny Janik, who's the other person doing this. I don't know where he is in the process. But for me, I have to take a navigation test, okay, which is a pretty extensive test, physical book test. I have to accumulate 28 hours as crew somewhere.
Oh, wow.
And then I have to get some personal qualifications or professional qualification standards signed off in this booklet that I have. That's a matter of just getting a facility, getting it underway, and practice doing them in front of a coxswain. He can sign off on it. And then I have to do a qualifying underway exam with, we only have one in the state, and he's in Juneau. He's active duty.
Inspector?
Tester. Tester.
Yeah.
And but he's willing to do that, and we have it on the calendar, at least for me, in August. So I have to do XYZ between now and August. Johnny has less to do than I do. So.
And then you're good to go?
Then I'm a coxswain, but I'm also one of the crew. So, and we have several people working on their crew qualifications, which is the same process, just not as extensive.
You told me that you were a boat driver when you were active duty.
Right.
And you also told me that experience doesn't count for the coxswain certification here with the auxiliary. How much of this stuff that you're learning is new to you or was new to you?
You know, I could very cockily say none of it, but some of it is because it's updated. A lot of it's updated. And a lot of the PQS, as we call them, the professional qualification standards, involve radar, involve other aspects that I didn't have when I was active duty 50 years ago. We didn't have radar on our patrol boats. We did it blind, so to speak.
Oh, wow.
I was in New Orleans, and our biggest challenge was fog. Here, we have lots of other challenges that radar is pretty much essential. To give one example, Now, it doesn't count as far as the PQSs. I can't say, oh, I did that before. No, I still have to demonstrate that I know how to do it. And that's active duty. Active duty, as an example, active duty can't come on our facility as a coxswain without going through the auxiliary process.
Oh, wait, really?
They can come on as crew. They can come on as advisors. They can come on for lots of things. And this is a process that I have no influence over. This is just the way it is.
Sure. But if the Commodore showed up of the fleet of, you know, of the United States Coast Guard, he'd have to be a crew for you.
Yes, he would. by regulation.
Sure.
So I does my experience count? Yes, it does. Quite a bit. I mean, I know how to drive a boat. I know how to be safe with a boat. I didn't have to learn that. I already knew that. So it's a shortcut. I still have to demonstrate that I know how. Search patterns have changed. As an example, and I'm getting too technical maybe, but search patterns have changed. My experience was what we call an expanding square. You start here and you just make squares, get them bigger. Okay. There's one now that uses lobes, three lobes, that's very effective and it's very new to me. So you have to get out and you practice and figure out how to make it work, because there's a whole lot of things that have to happen simultaneously. And that's practice, muscle memory, so you don't have to think about everything. Those kinds of things. And so that is new, and that's all good.
Oh, sure. You know, we're just about out of time. Maybe you can give a pitch for your meeting tonight and recruitment and why people, you've explained very nicely why people would want to be involved, but maybe you can give a little pitch here in the last minute or so.
Okay, our meeting tonight, once again, is at 6 o'clock for potluck. You don't have to bring anything, just come eat our food. And then at 6:30, we have our regular meeting. Robert's Rules of Order. We have certain order of the things that we do at our meeting. And we'll do some training at some point during the meeting. Most of this is just business at the meeting to take care of between now and the next 2 months, because we won't meet again until August. And then fellowship afterwards. There's certain trainings that are required for new members. We have some new members, so we will do some of that training to make sure it gets done. Not that we're making sure they do it, we're just making sure that it gets done and recorded, because all of this is recorded in a database and it has to be done. So come to the meeting. Our published phone numbers in our classes are good and pertinent. You might call myself, and I'm on a lot of those phone numbers. I'll just give you my personal phone number. Everybody says don't do that, but oh well, here we go. 907-420-7179. That's a cell phone, and in theory, I'll answer it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Voicemail is fine for me, though. Well, Marion, I really appreciate you coming by here this morning and talking with us. The United States Coast Guard Auxiliary, you guys do all the good things, and I'm happy to know you, and I'm happy that you folks are here. I really am. This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.